If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, February 17th, 2023. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing at LA Jr., and joining me is my roommate, Michael Hyam.
Hey, you know what time it is? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm here back on KFGD.
For the first time in the studio.
Yeah. Like, we done KFGD in our bedrooms.
Yeah.
The same house.
Where I could hear you from the other room as, as you're talking on the Discord call.
Did we never do an episode where we had you guys sit in the same place from home?
No.
I think I was pushing for that.
A lot of people were pushing for that. And I didn't
want
to make Kevin drive over to, like, figure out a setup. And, like, I didn't want to do the sharing microphone thing where I'm, like, passing it back and forth.
I'm just fucking, like, sitting in your bedroom, like, over your shoulder, like,
yeah, he's like, I have something to say. Michael, welcome to the show for the first time in the studio. Of course, this is not the first show you've done in the studio. You've done Kinda Funny Gamescast, where you did our Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core review, and you did excellent on that, so I'm very happy to have you on Kinda Funny Games Daily.
Hell yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm chilling. Man, I've been busy. For folks who know, I've gone full-time freelance. Since being a let go from
Fanbyte.
From Fanbyte, yeah.
Part of a wide array of layoffs that have happened at Fanbyte and other outlets. But
yeah, it's unfortunate, but I think that it's been really exciting. Like, I've been mad busy out covering different things for different websites. We'll talk about what I did for GameSpot most recently. Also working with IGN, got some things lined up with some other websites that y'all will see very soon. So man, I'm out there. I'm still doing it.
Are there any freelance gigs that have come out already that you can talk about that you want to pimp? I know we're going to talk about Black Dragon Ishin reviews and stuff like that. But is there anything else?
Hold on to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. We're going to hold on to that. Of course, people can follow you on Twitter. We're at?
Yep. At Michael P. Hyam on Twitter.
Hell yeah. And I know, like, right now, from living with you, I can tell that you're not hurting for gigs. Like, I love, like, like coming home and, like, you know, hearing you either on a podcast in your room, right? Or I can tell that, like, you got work that you're doing, right? Because right now is review season, and so the freelance gigs are coming in. But, of course, I'm sure people can hit you up if they want you to work on any guides, reviews, all that stuff.
Also, MinMax just shared that we're going to be doing a deepest dive on Yakuza Ishin, so that's, like, one of the series that I do. The boy Ben Hansen hit me up, and also got to collab with Sarah Pods and Leo Vader and Jacob Geller also, which is, like, really cool, like, Jacob Geller.
A good crew over there.
Yes, sir.
Really good crew.
Yeah. So, cool things. I'm, like, legit excited for a lot of the work that I'm doing now.
Hell yeah. Well, enough about that. Let's talk about today's stories, which include a Like a Dragon Ishin review roundup, Civilization VII's been announced, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Ishin a week at 10 a.m. live right here on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames and Twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to KindaFunny.com/YoreWrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later, YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, head to kindafunny.com/KFGD to write in with your questions, squad ups, and more. And remember, patreon.com/kindafunny will get you the show ad-free plus a bevy of bonus content. Housekeeping for you, remember our Wild Hearts and PSVR 2 reviews are up on youtube.com/kindafunnygames as a Kinda Funny Games cast and a PSLW XOXO respectively, so go check those out if you haven't. And then over on Patreon, we got a new episode of Kinda Feudie, and we're about to record a very magical episode of The Shit List featuring the one and only Michael Hyam, where me, Michael, and Barrett are going to be talking about the top 10 Persona characters. It should be a really good episode. Of course, this is one that I lined up specifically for Michael because I know it's going to be a very good time. Who's one character that should be on that list?
That should be on that list?
Yeah.
That I'll pick one that probably won't be on the list, but Maya Amano from Persona 2.
Ooh,
that's my girl.
All right. You got a Persona 2 character in there. All right, this should be exciting. Thank you to our Patreon producer, Delaney Twining. Today, we're brought to you by Shady Rays and Honey, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
a baker's dozen.
Starting with our number one, we got a Like a Dragon Ishin review roundup for you. Right now, that's sitting on Metacritic at an 81 and on OpenCritic at an 81. Tristan Ogilvie at IGN gave it a 7 out of 10 and says this. While its half-baked gunplay should probably have remained holstered, Like a Dragon Ishin's stylish sword fighting and over-the-top trooper card attacks successfully pair the Yakuza series' brand of hysterical action with the historical fiction of its 19th century Japan setting. Unfortunately, it's a step back in time, also presents a slight step down in quality for its sub-stories and side activities, which have been eclipsed in entertainment value by the other Yakuza games and Judgment games in the years since Ishin's original Japanese release, and the blander areas of its low-tech environment can't quite compete with the flashy charms of Kamurocho when it comes to exploration. Even so, its high-stakes story had me hooked throughout, and it was fascinating to get an insight into a period of Japanese history I knew very little about previously, albeit through a heavily heavily fictionalized lens. No matter which way you slice it, Like a Dragon Ishin is an enjoyable and interesting spinoff from the Yakuza series, but not an essential one. Alan Nguyen at Eurogamer gave it an unscored review and says, the long overdue samurai spinoff is classic Yakuza under its period dressing, but also underwhelming as a current gen remake. And then Michael Hyam at GameSpot gave it an 8 out of 10 and says, although Like a Dragon Ishin is dated in some respects, the gripping drama and spirit of Yakuza makes for an enticing historical fiction.
Yes, sir.
Of course, those are your words.
Those are mine.
So you've been reviewing Like a Dragon Ishin. I've been playing it as well. Unfortunately, I've not gotten to play as much as you have because, like I've been talking about for the last few weeks, it's been review season. I've split between a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But I want to start with you. Like, overall, you gave it an 8 out of 10. Mm-hmm. What are your overall thoughts on Like a Dragon Ishin?
Ooh, I wrote like 2,200 words on hit video game website GameSpot.com that y'all should peep. Make Tam happy. But there's a lot of things to touch on. So... I know Tristan had the long excerpt there for that, and he's kind of on point. Like, I agree with him, but I think that the high points of the Yakuza franchise really hit me as a fan of the franchise for very long. I played like 10 of these games, man. Like, and still time and again they get me with the story. So a couple of things I get into with it is that yes, this is a remake / remaster, but it does feel dated in many respects. Like I say, because it's much better than what Ishin was back in 2014 when it only came out in Japan. Like, it's nice to have it in the West now, but it is built off the foundation of Yakuza 0 and Kiwami 1. And having played Lost Judgment most recently, where it is kind of the best version of RGG's brawler combat, playing Ishin is like, oh, this definitely feels old. Like, the combat feels stiff in many ways, but there are some highlights with the combat because there's four different stances, and the stances feel a lot more distinct than they do with some of the hand-to-hand stuff that you've seen in such as Yakuza 0. So I do like the boss fights are probably one of the highlights because it feels like a one-on-one duel between swordsmen, and dodging, parrying, and getting my hits in and using heat actions in those fights it's better than series pass because a lot of those fights feel like a war of attrition, which is like I'm just hammering on this dude, and if he gets me, then I'm just gonna pop the menu open and use a healing item or whatever. But here I felt like I was a little bit more technical, so it was a lot more fun to do some of the one-on-one boss fights with all the overtop theatrics and heat actions and shit like that. Story-wise though, it's pretty wild to see a lot of these characters that I know and love take on the role of historical figures. So almost all these characters are pulled from the actual history books.
Yeah, that was one of the things I noticed first, because I've dipped into quite a few different entries into the Yakuza franchise, right? Like, I started Yakuza 0, I played like 8 hours of Yakuza Like a Dragon, I played quite a bit of Lost Judgment, and booting up Like a Dragon Ishin, immediately I recognized the main character who looks like Kiryu, right? And they start to run into other characters where I'm like, oh, you seem like you're familiar as well. And one of the things, I was having a conversation with Roger during the review process where Roger was like, hey, so I'm also playing Like a Dragon Ishin. What is this compared to regular Yakuza? Like, is this an Elseworld story? What is this? And I'm like, I don't know. These are their ancestors. It wasn't until I got back home when I asked you about it where you were like, oh, no, this is a real... Like, this is a historical tale, right? Obviously, they take liberties and it's fictional and stuff, but it's them retelling a story from Japanese history, but implanting characters from modern Yakuza into the roles and the archetypes they fit in. And so, like, you get the main character, who's Kiryu, who has like the same kind of personality as him.
Yeah.
But then you'll meet another character who might have been a villain character in Yakuza, and they'll be in a villain role in the game because they're matching them up to how they were in modern Yakuza, yeah. which is very interesting.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts, because when you meet these characters, such as like Majima's character in there is exactly how he is in the mainline games. And I think that's one of the more exciting parts for me. It's like seeing old friends and rivals again, but take on different roles. It almost feels like they're doing a stage play for Edo period Japan. So like this takes place in the 1850s, 1860s in Japanese history, which is a pivotal time. And so the way it's kind of dramatized through this story is it's pretty wild, and it's definitely like, yeah, they're like Ryoma Sakamoto is like a big figure in Japanese history, but this it's very much like not the Ryoma Sakamoto from the history books. Just kind of
because I imagine he wasn't like dual wielding a sword and a gun and fucking spinning around shooting people.
Yeah, he wasn't worrying about people's mochi on the streets and saving little dogs and living off the land with his adoptive daughter. Like, but it is uses some of the similar dynamics. And this is very much a political story, because during this time there was a lot of internal conflict within Japan. Not to like go into like a big history lesson, but this is before the Meiji Restoration, which was the modernization of Japan, which is, you know, I have a lot of feelings about the glamorization of the samurai and this point in Japanese history. A lot of people adore the aesthetics of that era, and I think you see some of that romanticization and that glorification in games like Ghost of Tsushima.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very much a Yakuza story where everyone's betraying you. Everyone's trying to start a new alliance. So you basically take all the gang drama from the main Yakuza games and just transport that into political factions during a time when everyone wants to be in control of Japan's future. And you see a little bit about like that time when the Western world started meddling in Japanese politics a little bit more, and the influence of Western technology on Japan, where they looked at that and said, oh shit, we should, you know, we need to catch up with the rest of the world. There were like political factions who believed that and kind of fought for that power to make those decisions in history. And, you know, I think I say this in my review that Ishin keeps some of that glorification and romanticization at arm's length, where like we're here for a Yakuza story with the backdrop of all these politics. There are some moments where they, you know, they try and do like the patriotic platitudes that I'm just kind of like, if you know Japanese history and the period after of imperialism and nationalism, like it's not that tidy. You know, it's a very ugly history, especially like, you know, in the Asian world, like, you know, the Philippines was one of the victims of Japanese imperialism. So I'm like conflicted when I see these stories, whatever. But, you know, Yakuza is like a Dragon Ishin is a Yakuza story at its heart. So like I don't necessarily put too much weight in that because I'm there to see this historical fiction. And there are just like really dramatic and enticing moments throughout this game where you really feel the emotion of the cutscene and like what the characters are fighting for.
And that's the thing that struck me when I was playing it is Yakuza is a franchise that I should love, right? It's a franchise that I feel like I should get into. And it's mainly been a bandwidth thing of me always falling off because I always have something else to play, right? Or like me falling this time around for Like a Dragon Ishin, this was one where I was like, this feels like more so for fans of the franchise. Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm not ready for Like a Dragon Ishin yet because of the references to other characters, because I feel like I would get way more out of it if I did go play Yakuza 0 and some other Yakuza games first to familiarize myself with the characters and then come back. Yeah. You know, like, for me, as somebody who is hopping into Like a Dragon Ishin, just because I saw the trailer and I thought, you know, oh man, Yakuza in history with swords? All right, cool. Yeah, let me check this out. I feel like it wasn't speaking to me that as much as it would you or somebody who's already into the franchise. That said, the story and the drama was interesting from the get-go, where I was like, oh shit, these characters are interesting. Their back and forth, their relationships are interesting. What they do in terms of driving the main character's motivation early on, I was like, oh shit, this is drama right here.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It felt like watching a drama. And that's what Yakuza is a lot of the time, is it feels like you're watching a drama with really good characters and really good development and, you know, oftentimes great voice acting and all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, like that was my main takeaway. And then I was like, all right, I'm gonna come back to this later because I need to play some more Yakuza before I play Like a Dragon.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I would always recommend folks, and we talked to Roger about this early before we got on, that Yakuza 0 is the closest to a perfect game. You heard it from me first. That I always recommend that as the starting point because it is the best representation of the franchise, and it has like the greatest hits of like all the mini games and sub stories and writing and drama. Like Yakuza 0 is always it. So like Ishin is a good place to start. Like it is a place to start. Like, you don't jump in the middle of Yakuza 3 and expect to understand what the hell is going on. But Ishin, like, if you want that historical context, that historical drama, definitely check it out. It does front load a lot of the terminology up front, like, pretty heavy, and it's a little hard to follow. Like, oh, the Shinsengumi and the Bakumatsu period and the Bakufu military force, like, all these different things. Like, if you're not familiar with the historical context, you're like, what is going on? But about the halfway point, when things start to fall in place, like, I couldn't stop. Like, after chapter 8, chapter 9, I was like, I'm gonna finish this game because it's that good.
So to give context, because I saw some people in chat earlier asking exactly what is Yakuza or Like a Dragon Ishin, it is a game that originally came out in Japan, and this is the remake / remaster that is now released in the West as well as Japan.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. That sounds like something that's appealing to you then.
Yeah. I've been asking the localization team about Yakuza Ishin for many years, and it's finally here, so it's nice to at least have it on modernized for all platforms. But yeah, really enjoyed it. So
what's next for Yakuza? They had other games announced, right? There was the man who steals the world, sold name.
The man who erased his name.
The man who erased his name.
All right, I was close.
Like a dragon.
The man who steals the world.
like a dragon Gaiden. Yeah, the man who erased his name, which is... It's about Kiryu again. I love Kazuma Kiryu, so I'm curious what they're doing with this. I thought we had closed the book on him with Yakuza 6. One of the best endings to a series, period, Yakuza 6, but seems like they're not done with him. But yeah, and then after that, Like a Dragon 8.
And that's the one with Ichiban.
With Ichiban, yeah. So I'm curious about what they're doing with that, because I thought him and Kiryu are apparently teaming up or something. We don't know too much yet, but Ichiban is probably my favorite video game character of all time. I can't wait to see him again.
How do you feel about the overall state of, I guess, Like a Dragon now that they've changed the franchise name? I only hear good things for the most part, right? Even Like a Dragon, which I feel like is in all the reviews, right? There are caveats of, it feels dated. Yeah, it feels this, it feels that. But, you know, IGN still gave it a 7, which is a good score, right? GameSpot, you gave it an 8, which is a great score. Would you say Like a Dragon / Yakuza overall is in an amazing place right now? Is there any worry that any fans have about Yakuza?
I talked about this with the boy, Jake Decker, on GameSpot After Dark, not to plug something else I was on. But he asked, like, do you feel like there's any franchise fatigue? And maybe there is if you, like, started from the beginning and blasted through all these games in 1 year. But ultimately what I told him is that there aren't any other games that are doing what Yakuza does. So it still feels fresh that at least once a year or once every 2 years, we get a new game from RGG Studio. And because there aren't other games like the Yakuza franchise, like, no one does cutscenes. Oh, I'll say no one, but, like, no one does drama the same way that RGG does. Mm-hmm. So every time they come out with a new game, it's like, I'm rubbing my hands like Birdman and shit. I'm like, all right, I'm in the mood. I'm ready for another one of these. Like, even though, like, I like Lost Judgment, I wrote a review on Fanbyte and, like, talked a lot about, like, the nuances of it. I'm like, okay, I see y'all trying to do some new things. Doesn't quite hit here, but at the end of the day, you know, RGG, they're great storytellers. Mm-hmm. And every time a new one comes out, I'm like, man, I'm ready. Like, when Ishin came out, I was like, yo, I'm ready. When Like a Dragon Gaiden comes out eventually, I'm ready. When Like a Dragon 8 comes out, I'm ready. Just because, like, there's no other games like the Yakuza franchise.
Yeah, it's awesome, because I look at Yakuza with a bit of envy, because, you know, all three of us here all love Persona. Uh-huh. And when you were describing to me the concept of Like a Dragon Ishin and how it's this, you know, they're taking those characters, putting them in a historical setting, you know, giving different context to what's going on, but you are getting those stories. I was like, man, if they did that with Persona 5, the amount of excitement that I would have to play something like that. Like, Barrett, could you imagine a Persona story using Persona characters in, like, with the same arcanas and all that stuff, but it takes place the 1800s?
Devil Summoner's kind of like that. It doesn't really fit in, like, we're telling a piece of history or necessarily, but it definitely, like, goes back to a past era of Japan and uses, like, similar concepts as Persona, because it is a Shin Megami Tensei game, which I've been playing a bit recently. But yeah, I would love to see a Devil Summoner come back and do something like that. So,
hell yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's hop in to story number 2. We got another review roundup for you. This time it's Octopath Traveler 2. Right now, that's sitting on Metacritic at an 86 and on OpenCritic at an 86. Josh Broadwell, Game Informer, gave it an 8.5 out of 10 and says, Octopath Traveler 2 does what an excellent sequel should. Instead of breaking new ground left and right, it improves on the original in nearly every way and feels more confident about the stories it tells. There's still room for improvement in some of its stiffer areas, but Octopath 2 is a sterling achievement all around. Jade Sayers at Push Square gave it a 9 out of 10 and says, Octopath Traveler 2 presents enough rich turn-based action to forgive its minor combat system flaws. It's a breathtaking work of art, filled to the brim with story and adventure, bolstered by a cast of incredible characters who will leave you wanting more at every turn. A masterfully crafted RPG. Then Ozzy Mejia at Shaq News gave it an 8 out of 10 and says, I give Square Enix and Acquire Corps props for ambition, but there's still a ways to go before the Octopath Traveler lives up to its potential and reaches its final form. Of course, Michael, you play a lot of JRPGs.
Sure.
Is Octopath one that's on your radar?
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those games where I kind of owe it to myself to play this game. No matter where I land on it, I feel like there's a lot of games that because I have followed JRPGs since I was a kid and play a lot of these games, I just want to know where they're at, especially with something like the 2D, the HD 2D stuff is always striking to me. Like especially what they did with Live Alive was fucking sick.
Amazing.
Yeah, I love what they did with that. The thing though, like Octopath 1 didn't necessarily hook me. Like I feel like this was, okay, we're going to show you HD 2D and kind of do the classic RPG themes and hit that with 8 different characters. But conceptually, it's creative, and I like the idea. I don't know if the execution was quite there with the first game necessarily, but I do want to, like, folks have said that they, you know, this is their opportunity to refine that formula, try that again, and maybe get its hooks in people in a little bit more efficient manner, because there's Octopath 1 kind of dragged on. Like, all right, I got 8 characters. All right, let me get through this. And some of the writing is very superfluous, but yeah, I'm going to be hopping on Octopath 2 because I don't think you need to have any context of Octopath 1 mm-hmm. to get into this one. So I will definitely make time for it before the end of the year because this is a long game. And hopefully I don't drop off on it. Like Live was a lot more forgiving with your time, or it respected your time a little bit more, I would say. So I want to see if Octopath can tidy up some of those things so I can get through another 60, 70, 80 hour RPG, man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Octopath 2 is one that, you know, interests me for the fact that I fucking loved Live Alive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, leading into Octopath Traveler 2, I've not felt as much of the need and desire and like hunger for it. I think part of that is just because I played Live Alive like half a year ago. Yeah. And then also I had a similar thing with Octopath Traveler 1 where I started it and it just wasn't clicking in that way. Octopath Traveler 2, for now I might wait until maybe later in the year to get to. But I also think for me that's also the thing of I've started to realize the kinds of JRPGs I gravitate to.
Right.
Live Alive, I liked because it was in that category of an Earthbound or an Undertale mm-hmm. or like something that has a lot of heart, that's very goofy, that has like a really good sense of humor, that's quirky, that's weird and different. That's my iconic JRPG. Like those are the kind of things that I like. And Octopath seems a bit more aligned with, hey, no, this is a traditional, yeah. Like you're going to get a fantasy story out of this.
Yeah, it feels very Shakespearean in its writing.
Yeah.
That, like, I get it. Like, if you're into that, like, this is what it would be 1000% your shit. But for me, I'm kind of like, all right, trying a little too hard with this with this vibe. But I respect it.
Yeah, and like, shout out for them putting out another great one, right? 86 on Metacritic and OpenCritic is pretty incredible. And you know, it's one that, again, every single time I look at the art style of it, when I look at the videos, like, Bear was just pulling up footage just a second ago, and I'm like, God damn, this game looks so good.
Yeah.
Like, the art style of these games is incredible. And what I honestly want, and I'm sure we've talked about this a billion times, but, like, I would love to see that used for even more remakes. I mean, Live Alive was a remake, right? And look how well that turned out. I would love to see them use that and remake Chrono Trigger with that art style, remake some, like, go back and like partner with Nintendo and remake Earthbound with that art style, or Mario RPG. Could you imagine? I guess that would basically be like Paper
Mario. Paper Mario like updated with that.
Yeah, yeah, like that would be dope as hell.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god, yeah, that'd be sick. But you know, it's nice to see Square Enix trying things like this. They put out a lot of games. They put out a lot of games with various titles over the past year that, you know, I don't think,
what was it, Everyday Sunlight?
Every Day. Every Day. Daylight. I don't know.
Various Daylight.
Yeah, I don't know if that came out, but they had Valkyrie Elysium. They had the farming shit, Harvestella. Like, there's, and I don't know.
They crank out games like nobody's business.
Yeah, yeah. But something.
But people
like,
must buy them, right? If they keep putting these things out, people are buying these games, and so it's a strategy that's working.
Yeah, but Octopath 2, I'm glad to see that it exists and they continue supporting games like this.
So Barrett's pulled up our fantasy draft, of course, that we did on PSLW, XOXO, and XCast.
Whoa.
For those who are wondering, who picked up Octopath Traveler 2 was the one and only Janet Garcia.
And Ishin.
And Horizon Call of Mountain. So,
so 11, 22, 16, that's 38, plus 19 points. She's coming up on 57 points already. Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Can you scroll back up? So, like, what? She got three games. Or, no, scroll to Janet's thing. Because Janet got three games that came out this week. To get three games on your thing and only get, is that 8 points? So you're getting 8 points? Because it's ever. Oh, no. I'm doing really bad math, actually. I forget the bar is 70. So, yeah, never mind. 11, never mind. Throw out my argument. Yeah, she's actually doing great.
And think about it. These are her, like, fourth and fifth round picks, and then I think she picked up Horizon Call of the Mountain like later after the draft.
Yeah,
so.
And she also has
wrestling. Looking good.
She got Tears of the Kingdom. Wait, what is on my draft? How'd she get Tears of the Kingdom?
Because she had the first pick because she
what
won
did I
last
pick?
Year.
I got Silk Song.
Creative Business Unit 69.
That's the name of the studio. That's the name of the studio. I wanted to keep it.
You didn't even draft Final Fantasy 16. Come on.
I think somebody else got 16 is what happened. But yeah. Oh, man.
No, Final Fantasy 16 wasn't drafted until the second round.
Wow.
Well, yeah. I was going to get Silksong before 16. And it was my second game. I got Resident Evil 4 Remake. I feel very good about that. I feel better about that than Final Fantasy 16. And I got Wolong on there. I'll be doing fine. Fire Emblem Engage should have been better. All right. Get it together, Nintendo. God damn. Story number three. It looks like Redfall's physical version includes a download code instead of a disc. This is Jordan Midler at Video Games Chronicle. It looks like Redfall's physical release will include a download code for the game instead of a disc. As spotted by a Reset Era user, the game's page on the Bethesda support site states that, quote, the physical Xbox copies of Redfall are Xbox Play Anywhere codes, which can be played on both the Xbox Series X and the Microsoft Xbox app on PC, end quote. VGC has asked Bethesda for comment on this story. While some special editions of modern first-party titles have included download codes, including notable releases like 2022's God of War Ragnarok, it's uncommon for the standard versions of games on Xbox to include just a code. This news follows confirmation that the Arcane title will require an online connection to play, even in single-player mode. This is an interesting one.
Yeah.
How does this strike you, the idea that you're buying a physical edition of a standard physical edition and you're getting a code inside the box?
I mean, I kind of get it from like a production standpoint, but you're kind of wasting money on putting out physical, like the plastic boxes and shit, like, and you're just going to have a download code. I think over the years, as we move more towards a digital future, I guess, the more I've valued the presence of physical copies of games, because you see so many games get taken off of digital storefronts, and then you don't have any way to play the game unless you visit some illicit websites. That's unfortunate. But I mean, the thing for it's Arcane, and like they're doing something different with Redfall, and I don't know, man. Like at the same time, like I do understand it because we're in a generation where they're like the two consoles, like, well, Xbox and PlayStation, and in this case only Xbox, one of the systems that they're selling just doesn't have a disc drive. So I kind of get it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wish you could at least put the game on disc. Then again, at the same time, we've seen so many games where you put the disc in, it's like, okay, cool. Now you're going to download 60 gigabytes.
Exactly. Like, a lot of discs are just keys anyway to download the game. So. And that's where I think the story gets messy and very layered. I think in terms of game preservation, this is sort of an L, right? Like the idea that, all right, so it's all digital. What happens years and years and years down the line when like the game goes offline or like the game gets taken off the shop like 15 years from now, right? Does that mean that Redfall will just disappear and nobody will have a copy of Redfall anymore? That stuff gets me concerned on the preservation side. And then also on the side of the consumer maybe wanting to resell games. Hey, I bought this game for $70. All right, I played it. I played 10 hours. I'm kind of over it. Let me sell it back to GameSpot. You can't do that with this. Or GameStop.
Hey, Tam.
Yes, let me sell it back to Kimur Hussein. But no, you can't do that for this game. Yeah. I think that is a bummer on the side of a consumer. If I'm somebody who's showing up to the store to buy Redfall, I'll say do it digitally or do it through, first of all, do it through Xbox Game Pass. What are you doing paying full price?
Sure.
But then also I'll just go digital for this game, because at this point, why would you buy a physical edition of Redfall if you're getting a digital code anyway? Unless you're somebody who really wants the box.
Put it on your shelf, right?
Yeah, like if you're somebody that really wants to put it on your shelf, then do you. But aside from that, I feel like there's not really a good use case for buying the physical edition.
Yeah.
On the Microsoft / Bethesda side of it, for a game that's always online, like,
it makes more sense.
It makes more sense. You're going to need internet anyway to play the game.
Yeah.
If you have internet, then you can probably download the game. I think on that side, that might be where they're thinking. And then also the idea of how many people are going to buy this game physically when you're talking about it being on Game Pass, it being on the Xbox Store, like,
and it being so multiplayer focused.
Right. How many of us are going to show up to the store? And you talk about spending more money or saving money, right? I'm sure Xbox and Bethesda are saving so much money by not printing discs by just printing the code and putting it in the box.
Yeah, like the cost and then, of shipping to retailers.
Exactly. And then you're like also getting the marketing of, hey, I'm at Best Buy, I'm looking for a game. What's this Redfall thing? Like, being in the physical stores just as a marketing thing, I think, is probably still very valuable to them. I think that's the only reason why they are releasing this physical box, just is like, to have that placement.
Here's a box that you can see, even though you're not going to get a disc, at least you know that Redfall is a thing that exists.
Yeah, like by doing this, maybe you're able to have like the Redfall character stand, the cardboard pop-up at the GameStop stores that still have that marketing. Because again, if you're not in GameStop for this AAA game, then I think you are missing out on that arm of marketing, which is probably why they're doing this. But I'm mixed on it. I don't like it from the consumer side, but I kind of get it from the business side of why they're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough.
Yes, sir.
Before we get into our next news story, I want to tell you about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Why didn't Michael get the one?
I'm here.
I thought my preview was on the jib, and then I faded over to him. But I'll fade over to him again.
Yeah, fade over to him.
Let me sell you on Kind of Funny Games.
Heck yeah. Don't say any curse words, because we're about to go into ads.
Okay. Spend money. Patreon.
Yeah.
Dollars.
Yeah.
Give it to my friends here.
Yeah. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go and get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to Shady Rays for sponsoring this episode. Look how cool I look. You too can look this cool. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered from the sun to the slopes with premium polarized shades, customizable snow goggles, and so much more. Shady Rays offers the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair of sunglasses is backed by lost and broken replacements. If you lose or break your pair, even on day one, they told us they will send you a brand new pair, no questions asked. They'll also provide 10 meals to fight hunger in America with every order, and have donated over 20 million meals to date. That's fantastic. There's no risk when you shop with Shady Rays. Their team always has your back. Exclusively for y'all listeners and watchers right now, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the new year. You can go to ShadyRays.com and use code KINDOFUNNY for 50% off 2+ pairs of polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself. These are 5-star rated by over 200,000 people. Again, that's ShadyRays.com. Use the code KINDOFUNNY. Shout out to Honey for sponsoring this episode. Honey is the easy way to save when shopping on your iPhone or computer. And thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. And we all know there's nothing better than the feeling of saving money. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. When you check out, the Honey button appears, and all you have to do is click apply coupons. You wait a few seconds, you see the fun little dancing guy. Honey searches for coupons, and it finds you the best ones. And then you just watch the prices drop. We here at Kind of Funny have been using Honey for years, and it's helped us save thousands on tech, costumes, food, you name it. Honestly, I just love how easy it is to just set and forget and save. That's the best part. Honey doesn't just work on desktops, it works on your phone too. You just activate it on Safari on your phone, you save on the go. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. You can get PayPal Honey for free at joinhoney.com/kindoffunny. That's joinhoney.com/kindoffunny.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Story number 4. Very exciting news for some of you nerds out there. Civilization 7 officially has been announced by Firaxis. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Firaxis Games has officially announced that Civilization 7 is in development at the studio. Revealed alongside the announcement that former COO Heather Hazen will be the new studio head, Firaxis confirmed that the next Civilization game is in development. Quote, I'm thrilled to have this opportunity to carry on the studio's storied legacy, beginning with the announcement that Firaxis is in development on the next iteration of the legendary Civilization franchise, said Hazen. Quote, I'm lucky to be working with some of the best developers in our industry, and we have plans to take the Civilization franchise to exciting new heights for our millions of players around the world. In addition, we'll continue to support Marvel's Midnight Suns with post-launch content and explore new creative projects for our teams, end quote. Fans have been patiently waiting for confirmation of a new entry for 7 years, following the launch of Civilization VI in 2016. The studio has since been at work on its other premier strategy franchise in XCOM Chimera Squad, and most recently tried something brand new with the aforementioned Marvel's Midnight Suns. With the announcement only coming now, without any mention of a release date, mechanics, or any other game details, it's likely that Civilization VII is still years away, but it'll seemingly be Firaxis Games' main focus going forward. The studio will be doing so without one of its leading figures, however, as former creative director of the XCOM series and Marvel's Midnight Suns, Jake Solomon, has announced his departure from Firaxis. In a statement published to Twitter, Solomon said he'd only had positive feelings for his time at the studio and was only leaving to pursue a new passion. His departure means the three leading figures behind the XCOM franchise have now all departed Firaxis. Solomon, as designer and director, was joined by producer Garth DeAngelis and art director Greg Forch. Michael, is Civilization your thing, or does Firaxis do anything for you?
Yeah, I mean, well, 4X strategy games are, I've had to leave those in the past. I'm not so smart anymore, but I have a ton of respect for the Civilization series. I played a lot of Civ 4 as a kid. I thought I had my third eye open playing that thing, man. So I got some history with Civilization, especially and more so XCOM. I played XCOM UFO Defense, the PS1 port back in the day. That was wild. But like, I really like the direction that they've taken XCOM with the more modern iterations. And Midnight Suns, like, put a lot of respect on Midnight Suns. That was a really good adaptation of I think of the Marvel IP that was at its core a really well done game. And the same way like RGG like does Yakuza games like no one else. I feel like Firaxis does strategy games better than at least at the scale that they do for a big studio or a seemingly big studio. No one does strategy games kind of like them. There's a lot of 4X strategy games out there, but Civilization has always been kind of the one that a lot of people hang their hats on.
To be behind XCOM and Civilization puts you in the, you're a GOAT tier in terms of strategy.
Yeah. But like Jake Solomon, talking to him over the years, like back when XCOM 2 was kind of on its way to release, he's a really cool dude. And he's kind of one of the great minds of strategy game development. So I'm excited to see what he does post departure.
Yeah. I mean, you got to assume that maybe he starts his own studio, or like maybe he goes into writing different kinds of stories.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think the thing here, when we talk about Jake Solomon leaving, I'm sure plenty of people go, oh man, like, what does this mean? Is there controversy? Is there this? Is there that?
Yeah.
He's leaving right after putting out Midnight Suns, which makes me think, he's ready for the next step.
Yeah.
He saw that game all the way through. He put it out. Critically, it's very well acclaimed. He did his thing, and now it's on to the next thing. Yeah. Right? I don't think he's being forced out because of sales or anything like that.
Yeah, sometimes you just feel like moving on, trying new things.
Exactly.
Like I said, it's like, got some new passions.
If he left 5 months before the game came out, then I'd be like, oh, shit, what's happening? But he's leaving a few months after the game's launch. Yeah. Like, he's probably about to make it like an independent studio or an independent game or something like that, I imagine, which could be really cool. Because if you're having, again, you're having somebody who's worked at, and this is me just purely speculating now, somebody who's worked at Firaxis for that long of a time as a creative lead role, go on and do their own thing, guess what? That is going to create competition, because I'm sure whatever he makes, is people are going to have their eyes on it. People are going to be like, oh, what genius idea are you going to come up with next, right? And is this going to be something that can compete with XCOM or Civ, right? Or the strategy games that have come from Firaxis. I think that's the kind of thing you want. We're going to talk about a bit more in our next news story about people leaving a studio to create another studio. Yeah, that's what I want to see more. I want to see people branch out and do their own thing and be able to have their own passionate ideas come to fruition.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of examples of that where, you know, people work for a company and do these big games, and then it's like, okay, let me try something smaller. I know Rafael Colantonio from Arkane did like Weird, what was it? I think it was called Weird West, and it's like, oh, cool. Like, this developer that I've been following their work in their studio for a long time is, you know, they're experimenting, and you kind of, it's always fascinating to see like the DNA of the games that they did work on into like their smaller, more passion projects. So depending on what he goes on, like, I'm definitely going to be.
It could be anything too. Like, it could be this man is about to write a comic, or he's about to write a book game. Or do a board game. That would be actually pretty fun to see.
Yeah, he's always stepping on your territory right there.
Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, Civilization 7, very exciting for Civilization fans. You know, I'm not a Civilization person, but when Civilization came out in 2016, I heard about that shit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, people fucking love Civilization. And so, yeah, shout out to people. Shout out to y'all for getting that. Hopefully sometime soon.
Yeah.
Right. Hopefully it's not 10 years away.
Oh, sure.
Because the 2016, that was, God, I can't do math anymore. Eight years ago, 7 years ago.
They've had a lot of expansion packs since then, also, that have incorporated different elements. I know that they had, I think the most recent one, correct me if I'm wrong, was one that incorporated a lot of like climate change factors and elements into the gameplay formula, which was pretty interesting. So taking another crack at a base Civilization game, I really wonder what they can do with the formula, because, you know, there's been a lot of 4X games out there, 4X strategy games, and I think in the independent space too, we've seen a lot of creativeness in grand strategy, I guess you could say. But Civ 6, probably, yeah, it's going to be a ways out, but definitely keep my eye on it. I don't know if I got the headspace for that anymore, but you know, if you are, keep your third eye open.
Keep your third eye open.
If you ever want to play as Gandhi, you fucking shooting nukes out into the world.
I got a game for you. It's called Civ. Story number 5. We got some ex-Apex Legends and Titanfall leads. They formed a new studio called Wildlight Entertainment. This is Jordan Midler at Video Games Chronicle. A number of former Respawn Entertainment developers have announced the formation of Wildlight Entertainment, a new game studio. The team, which is almost entirely made up of developers that have previously worked on Apex Legends or the Titanfall series, is currently hiring for several senior roles. Leading Wildlight Entertainment is Chad Grenier, former game director of Apex Legends, who also served on the teams of both Titanfall games and the original Modern Warfare series prior to Respawn boss Vin Zampella's split from Infinity Ward. Grenier is joined by multiple other former Respawn developers who all left within the last 14 months. That includes Mohamed Alavi, the former Modern Warfare and Titanfall designer, who was attached to a single-player adventure game said to be the canceled Titanfall campaign until his departure last year. I also got a tweet here from Chad Grenier, who tweeted out, "For the last year, I've been hard at work creating a new game studio comprised of some of the most amazing developers from my previous time on COD, Titanfall, and Apex Legends. Today, we get to announce Wildlight Entertainment." Very interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
Very interesting. Does this do anything for you?
Yes. I'm not trying to flex, but you know, I've talked to Chad Grenier over the years as well about the development of Apex and the different seasons that they do, and like, great creative minds at Respawn still. Like, I think Respawn will be okay. I think you know, they got that Star Wars money.
Yeah.
I know it's unfortunate they had to shut down the Apex mobile thing, and you know, the stuff about Titanfall. It's like, damn. Really wish that can come to fruition. But again, this is another case of, you know, developers who spend a long time at a certain studio and then branch out to try some new things. And maybe they can kind of rekindle some of those ideas that they didn't get to like execute on at Respawn. Who knows? Those games are kind of, they're like big projects. They're impressive and expensive projects also. So I'm wondering what kind of scale they can provide some of the games that they're going to work on, or the game that they're going to work on. But it's also funny how Respawn was also an offshoot of Infinity Ward, and then now we have Wildlight, which is an offshoot of Respawn. So the cycle continues of developers just like, you know, maybe they get burnt out, or maybe there's like, okay, well, if I stay here, I'm not going to be able to do the thing that I actually want to do, and now I'm in a good position to do that. You know, things are things are a little different now in the game development space. But yeah, seems like I'm excited to see what they do because they have a good track record. Obviously, I think Apex Legends is still the best battle royale out there right now.
Yep.
To this day. Yeah, and there's a lot of talented folks that are going along with him, and lots of talented folks still at Respawn as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. This is the continued story we've gotten of developers leaving AAA studios to then start their own studios, right? And I think, you know, you have quite a few things contributing to that, right? But I think overall, I like the idea that people are doing their own thing. You know, going back to the what we talked about with Jake Solomon, the idea that, hey, you can go on, make your own studio, get support from maybe Epic or maybe Skybound,
right,
maybe
yeah.
like some the Ubisoft or like or maybe EA Originals, right? Like there's so many resources, or maybe just crowdfunding. There's so many resources that you can reach out to possibly have your game funded. And I don't know. I really like seeing that stuff. You know, I think we've had a lot of hit or misses. Callisto Protocol just came out, right?
Yeah.
That's one that has had mixed reception. But that is a product of, you know, developers being like, hey, let's do our own thing. Let's do our own take on Dead Space because we worked on Dead Space before.
Yeah.
Hey, oh man, Krafton sees potential in us. Krafton wants to acquire us. Cool. Like, let's do this. And yeah, like you have more original ideas come to fruition that way. I love reading a story about these folks in particular starting a new studio, especially coming off of the story we got like last week or 2 weeks ago about the canceled Titanfall, quote unquote, Titanfall Legends game that was going to be this dope ass Titanfall single player campaign where you had the Titans, you had the Apex elements, you had all these things. Jeff Grubb was describing it having like Hades elements to it too, which sounds absolutely wild.
Dog.
A lot of good ideas there. I wonder if these folks are able to carry on any of those ideas, right? Or find other ideas that are just as cool that they can implement in a first-person shooter. Because you got to imagine, they got to be working on a first-person shooter, right? You're talking about people who came, you're talking about multiple people who came from working on COD, Titanfall, and Apex Legends.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Those are some of the best shooters in recent memory.
1,000%. Give me your new take, right? Give me your new game that is going to take a lot of those ideas that you've had while working on those games or things that you've learned while working on those games, and give me a banger. Like I'm expecting something dope from, again, you're talking about Chad Grenier, you're talking about Muhammad Alavi, who's attached to that canceled game. I got high hopes for this. I'm actually excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. When you put it like that. Yeah, I think so as well. Cause like not everything can be funneled through AAA development. Like big budget stuff from EA, like they want to make certain kind of games that are going to make a certain level of like going to rake in some money. So in a way, there's at least from the outside looking in, it's maybe there's not as much room for creativity in the things that they put out. I mean, you know, when they announced or it was revealed like that Titanfall was canceled, like a lot of people were very sad about that, and it's like, damn, if y'all aren't even going to support like a new Titanfall, then like, well, damn, what's going on? So yeah, shouts out to those folks, Chad Grenier and them.
Yeah.
Wildlife.
As an update, somebody in chat mentioned that on their Twitter, they mentioned working on a shooting game. And yeah, I pulled up their Twitter and here they say, "Hello world. We're very excited to announce our new game studio, Wildlight Entertainment. We've got big dreams of creating an epic shooter IP." So there you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Is that question?
Yeah, there you go. That answers that. And again, very excited about that.
Yeah.
And you know, to your point of not everything be funneled through AAA development, I think that's another thing that gets me excited as well. Because one thing that gives me a lot of fear is corporate consolidation.
Yeah.
The idea that everything has to be owned by something else. Xbox is buying Activision Blizzard. PlayStation is buying Bungie. Everybody's buying everything. Mm-hmm. That is, to me, a scary idea because I think it can lend to, I guess, a lot of homogenous type of development where, great, everything's a PlayStation game, everything's a Ubisoft game, everything's an Xbox game, right? And like you have less freedom of creativity, you have less brand new ideas that wouldn't be made under a Ubisoft or under a PlayStation, right? And this isn't me knocking these companies, this is me talking about what happens when you have a big corporate entity above you, right, that is helping you usher through these game ideas. When you have an independent studio, the world's your oyster. You can do whatever the fuck you want. Yeah. Like, as long as you can get it funded and put it out. It's risky. It's scary.
Yeah.
But, like, it's free. It's free. And so.
Yeah. It's don't get me wrong, though. I understand how difficult these things are to do and pull off.
For sure.
Or at least I can at least identify how difficult these things are. So it's not like, we're breaking away from the corporate overlords. Hell yeah, let's go. It's like, damn, that's like you said, it's scary, risky. But yeah, it's...
I've been trying to find there's a Twitter thread from Shinobi on Twitter where he has a thread of all of the AAA like independent studios that have been announced, right, from a lot of these folks that are leaving their like Ubisoft or other big publishers to create their own studio. And maybe he has a new one in there because like this was just announced, so I'm sure he might have updated it.
The updates.
But I look through that list and I'm excited about most of those projects. A good percentage of those projects are going to fail. Like,
sure,
that is just the fact of the matter of how the video games industry works, right? Like, that's the fact of the matter of a lot of games come out and they don't hit. We talk about it all the time we thought Cyberpunk was a surefire, and that game comes out and it disappoints a lot of people.
That shit made money, though.
I mean, it did make money, right? And, like, that's the other thing about it. But, yeah, like, a lot of these things are a lot of people are going to try, right? And a lot of people, like, you look at Callisto Protocol, and Callisto Protocol didn't sell as much as they wanted to sell, right? Like, the game was, you know, fine to okay to good to great depending on who you are, but that game didn't sell the numbers that they wanted it to sell, right? Like, you're gonna have a lot of those. You're gonna have some successes, right? And you're hoping for more successes, but then you're also gonna have some failures. And so again, I'm looking at this and I look at the team here and I'm like, this seems like a dope ass team. I want them to succeed. I hope they do. I hope they got the good head on their shoulders, and yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they bring out.
Hell yeah.
Final news story. Ooh. Story number 6. Sega says Sonic Frontiers sales greatly exceeded its expectations. This comes from Chris Scolian at Video Games Chronicle. Sega has stated that sales of Sonic Frontiers have exceeded its expectations at this stage. In a Q&A with investors last week, Sega Sammy Holdings Executive Vice President Makoto Takahashi and IR/SR General Manager Nobuaki Yoshi stated that despite the game's Metacritic score being lower than it had hoped, the game has sold better than it expected. At the time of publishing, the game has Metascores between 69, nice, and 75 across its target platforms. During the Q&A, one investor noted that the average price of Sonic Frontiers hasn't dropped much since it was released and asked what the company's sales strategy was for the game going forwards. Quote, in terms of the selling price, we temporarily held a sale on Black Friday as per our initial strategy, but have since returned to the previous price and have been able to achieve results so far while maintaining the price level to a certain extent, came the reply. Quote, the number of units sold greatly exceeded the full year plan at the beginning of the fiscal year, and we recognize that this is a title that will continue to sell over the long term based on our sales strategies, such as pricing, promotions, and the development of free DLC, end quote. In the article, they go on to talk about things like the Sonic movie and Sonic Prime and how that also contributes to sales as well. But I want to bring in a tweet from Benji Sales, who take some of the elements that they talked about in their Q&A, right, and distill it down. And Benji tweeted out, Sega says Sonic Frontiers sales greatly exceeded expectations, and the sequel will get a bigger budget. Quote, the number of units sold greatly exceeded our original estimation, end quote. And then here's another quote from the Q&A. We are proceeding with a bigger budget, even from basic research stage, end quote, for the sequel. Let's fucking go.
I know
we're winning. We're winning. Let's fucking go.
All right.
Sonic Frontiers with a better budget. Give it more time. Also, give it more time. That's really what it needs. But I'll take a bigger budget as well.
I was gonna say I respect the Sonic sickos, but I don't know if I do. But I'm happy for y'all.
You will respect this. You will respect this.
This fool out here rocking the Shadow the Hedgehog chain everywhere he goes, man.
God, could you imagine the Sonic Frontiers without the poppin'? Well, that's what we're getting in the sequel, baby.
I would like to see a little bit more than that improve with the Sonic Frontiers. But hey, listen, if there's going to be another, maybe take another crack at it.
Longer playtime? They could probably double the playtime in that thing. It took me, 20 hours to beat? We can get a 40-hour Sonic game. Let's do it. We won, everybody.
I take back what I said. I ain't happy for none of y'all. So, no, that's cool. I would like to see them take another crack at, like, make something that feels a little bit more complete, I guess. Yeah,
for sure.
And if they made hella money off that, they could make hella more money off of a sequel. So I guess it seems like they're in a good place. And you know, I don't hate Sonic, but so I want y'all to be happy.
I'm somebody who loves Sonic, and I gave the game a 3 out of 5. So I'm totally there with you in terms of there's so much to improve in that game.
Yeah.
And I honestly, even though I'm happy to hear it's getting a bigger budget. I think what they need is more TLC and more time. Mm-hmm. And just like the thing that worries me with Sonic is that Sonic sells as an IP regardless of the quality of the game.
Sure.
Yeah. We get so many bad Sonic games and people buy them anyway. Like, I mean, I don't know who these people are. Listen.
Yeah, you do.
I might be one of them.
I know one of them too.
Like, it's bad to the point where Sega is like, they look at Sonic Frontiers. I'm sure they didn't look at it and went, oh, yeah, it's perfect. Like, yeah, it's perfect. Like, it's perfect the way it is. Put it out. They know the problems with that game. They were just like, hey, just put it out.
So, yeah, put it out.
Like, it's going to sell.
Yeah.
People are going to buy it. It goes back to what we talked about with Pokemon, where Pokemon is too powerful. Pokemon has too much sales potential. They put out the buggiest Pokemon game of all time, and it was the fastest selling console exclusive of all time.
Yep.
I think that's where the problem lies with a lot of this stuff. But again, I think a bigger budget for it could probably help. What they really need, though, is time.
Yeah.
And like they need more of a focus on quality. Yeah. I think if they're able to do that, the design direction of Sonic Frontiers I thought was great. I like the idea of them being in the worlds being open, it being more collectathon based, it having these emergent boss fights they can get into. I think a lot of the platforming design and ideas were inspired, right? Not always quality. Some of that stuff needed a lot of sprucing up, but the direction of Sonic Frontiers is some of the best direction in Sonic.
Yeah.
It just needs more polish.
Yeah.
Way more polish is the thing.
Yeah, and I saw the vision. I saw what they were going for.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool, yeah. I want to see a Sonic game try this. I just hope that, you know, that bigger budget goes into the right places. Because, like, Sonic Frontiers, there's a lot of quality of life things that just like super questionable quality of life things, even small things like how the menu works, how you pull up different information that you need for like
how fast traveling works, how when you want to upgrade your character like, by talking to the rock man, like why do I have to then give him one collectible at a time to level up my speed or my like it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Barry, you fucking take down Sonic 06.
What is this?
Oh, this is Sonic 06. You take it. No.
Wait, this isn't the new one.
This is not the new one. No.
Fuck
you know
here.
What? You know what scene
you
is
know
this?
What
he's gonna
doing.
They're gonna kiss. The human and Sonic are gonna kiss.
No. No, I'm pretty sure this is the new one.
This is not the new. I played the new one. This is not the new one.
Sonic,
the new one doesn't have people. Oh, come
ending.
On! Yo, why did you show me this?
Sonic fucks.
What is this?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Sonic out here smashing. Like,
oh yeah, Sonic Gex.
Oh, Gex dead. Gex definitely be smashing.
Did you see the unreleased Gex Jr.?
No, footage? Whoa, what?
It was a Gex Jr. game.
Kid.
Yeah, probably. Okay. Or maybe it's him as a kid. It's not confirmed.
Oh, okay.
But I'm assuming.
Wait, why would it be him as a kid if
it's
Jr.?
Maybe it's
a story, you know what? That's
it's got to be his kid.
You're right. That's got to be his kid. I'm thinking Baby Mario. I'm thinking baby, like Baby Gex.
Oh, sure.
I'm conflating the two concepts.
I'll pass on that, man.
Look at how cool this kid is.
This kid's so cool. His hat's backwards. So you know he's cool.
Oh, shit.
Nah,
my
you
hat.
Know what?
My hat's
this kid, right here, he's the one who's telling you that he has got an uncle who works at Nintendo.
And is he wrong?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very wrong.
The developers of Gex might technically be counted as an uncle. I don't know.
That dude is looking for.
And they probably worked at Nintendo at some point in their careers.
God damn. Bring back Gex, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to see if they ever bring back Gex, but that day is just so far away.
Yeah, it is.
If I want to know what's coming out to mom and grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every week day.
Yeah. Out today, we got Super Nintendo World at Universal Studios in Hollywood. Let's go. I really want to go to that.
A lot of people were out there.
I saw, and here, I'm offended. I'm not offended. But like, I saw a lot of people there that are like my homies. I'm like, oh, man. That looks like that looks like a time right there. I wish I could go with them. I wish
you
I could
was
go
heated
with them.
When you saw Tam.
When I saw Tam in front of Bowser.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yep. Barrett has the image.
Also, he had Shigeru Miyamoto sign his Switch. Look at this thing.
That's awesome.
Damn, we got to jump Tam. I'm telling you.
That's
fantastic. We got to jump him. Take a Switch though. Sell that thing on the
allegedly.
Allegedly.
In a video game.
In a video game. Allegedly. You know, we can make that.
I got a Switch OLED. I could easily swap out that Joy-Con. I could go to his house like today if he's back home. Swap out the Joy-Con. He won't even know.
He won't even know.
That same way, Joy-Con just scribble on it.
Yeah.
On the bag, swap it out.
Yeah. Or you can be like, oh man, it rubbed off. Oh, that's a shame, Tam. That's a shame that the
just go in there and fuck up his whole shit.
Yeah.
Don't even steal it for yourself.
I was gonna say steal it and then use the clear one as an excuse that it rubbed off. But yeah, you can also just fucking analyze it.
That's
rub it off yourself. You're really a villain.
We love you, Tamor. Thank you for Thank you for letting me do the Yakuza Ishin review. Bring me back.
Hey. And also let me bring me when next time you go to Nintendo World, take me with you.
Oh, let's go.
Take me as your plus one.
Yeah, let's go. Let's arrange a trip. Barrett, you want to go?
I'm fucking down.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go on that Mario Kart ride so I can kick y'all's ass.
Ooh.
I'm saying, I think we can pitch this to Tim. Because, first of all, Tim definitely wants to go to Nintendo World.
Yeah, for content.
Yeah, that's
content. And I'm saying, like, a Super Nintendo World review on Kind of Funny Games Cast.
And then we get it
how many views? That gets a lot of views. And we get it expensed.
Yeah.
That gets a lot of views. Content creation.
Yeah.
We also got out today Tales of Symphonia remastered for PS4, Switch, and Xbox One. The Settlers, New Allies for PC. Wild Hearts for PC, PS5, Xbox Series X. Gigantosaurus, Dino Kart for PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Evil Below for PC and PS4, and then Farmside for PC and Apple Arcade. New dates for you, Genshin Impact version 3.5 arrives on March 1st, and then Bleak Faith Forsaken will launch on PC via Steam and GOG on March 10th. I watched a trailer for Bleak Faith this morning because I got an email about it, and the email equated it to like Dark Souls meets Shadow of the Colossus, and I was like, stop, you had me at Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched the trailer, and I was like, this looks pretty good.
Oh,
so,
okay.
There you go.
That's what's up.
Deal of the day for you. Speaking of Sonic the Hedgehog, there's this abomination that's gone on pre-orders. It's from Mario 64. Pop Taters Sonic the Hedgehog 4-inch figure is up for pre-order.
Awful.
That is cursed.
Entertainment Earth. It's $14.99 for free shipping. Or no, $39 plus orders with code free ship. I don't really understand the price structure here, but put in code free ship 39 to get it for cheaper possibly.
Yeah, so I think it's the abomination that you have here is $15, but if you want to get free shipping, you have to have an order that's $39 over.
And gotcha.
Then you use that code and stuff. So if you want to buy like fucking
see this and you're like, fuck, I want this $15 figure, but I want to get it with free shipping. Let me spend a lot more money to then get this for free shipping.
That's how they get you, bless. That's how they get you.
Pop Taters? This is basically like Mr. Potato Man, but
they're
Sonic?
they're trying to like sell this Funko Pop in a weird way, and I hate it.
It's potato based, like
Pop Taters.
Sorry.
Oh yeah,
I don't get it.
It's Mr. Potato. You got it right. Wow, I just looked up Pop Taters. Barrett, I need to Google Pop Taters. Look at this.
I'm scared.
Look at this. Let's. They got Bob Ross. They got Bob Ross Pop Taters.
Okay, damn. Maybe I get the Bob Ross one.
Pop Taters, cut the check.
They got Transformers Optimus Prime Pop Taters. It's all just Mr. Potato Head.
Oh, God. This is awful.
This is terrible.
This is so bad.
People fuck with Mr. Potato Head like that?
I didn't know. I mean, as a kid, I loved Mr. Potato Head.
I only knew him from Toy Story, honestly.
So, yeah, here you got... Jesus Christ.
You got Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons, Bob Ross. Is that Optimus Prime?
Optimus Prime. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, I don't know what that fourth one is. It's just an exploding head.
What the hell?
This is sick.
Yeah, this.
And not in a good way. Not in a cool, like, oh, this is fucking sick.
Wait,
this
is that? Like, hold on.
This is perverted.
Is that Deadpool? That Marvel one?
Oh, this one right here?
Yeah.
It looks like it.
That one kind of looks kind of cool, though.
Are you fucking serious right now?
I'm kind of digging this one. I'm not going to lie.
Shut up, Les.
Okay, I'm kind of digging it.
You're sick of that.
When you squint your eyes a little bit, it looks like it says Pop-Tarts.
Pop-Taters.
All right. Pop-Taters, there you have it. Deal of the day for you. Michael Haim. Or not. Oh, my God. The Breaking Bad Walter White Pop-Tater.
I am not co-signing this shit.
Does anybody in chat, does anybody out there... like Pop Taters? Is this a thing? Is this a thing? Let me know.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I've never heard of these before, but I'm kind of in. I'm not going to lie. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong where you write in. Let us know. Well, everybody in chat is like, fuck no. No.
We was wrong about Pop Taters.
Miku Gasu in chat said, I need that. Ronk in chat says, say his name.
Here's the thing. This seems like something Roger would unironically collect. Not you, Bless. Come on.
If I see a Pop Tater on Roger's desk, I'm beating the Sonic rings out that thing. Listen.
Here's the thing is I would ironically get the Sonic Pop Tater, but it genuinely looks ugly.
If there was a Tony Soprano Pop Tater, Roger would 100% get that.
All right, so I'm on kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where, of course, you can write in and let us know what we got wrong, as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube and listening there on podcast services around the globe. People are saying kindoffunny.com is down.
Pop Taters got to us. They heard us talking shit.
Somebody said Horizons. Wait, no. Let me read this first before I say it. All right. HD 2D was used in Final Fantasy VI Pixel Remaster for some areas in the game. This is Gundam Steven, by the way. He says, but I agree they should do Chrono Trigger in HD 2D. That's not a you're wrong. It's additional information, but I still appreciate it, Gundam. And that's it. Sorry for you're wrong being down. We should probably look into that.
Oh, it turns out we were all right.
Thing is, though, I don't think we have a role that kind of funny. That's the website online roles. So, like,
I mean, yeah, I guess the closest is checking in with Joey and seeing. I've also tried incognito mode. It's not loading there because I'm wondering if it's like a cache issue or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not loading there either. So
I got a cache issue too, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. A little too much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No, it's the opposite of that.
Of course. Today's Friday. That's it for Kinda Funny Games Daily for the week. But next week, we got a really exciting week of KFGD for you. On Monday, the return of the one and only Greg Miller. He's back with Tim. Tuesday, you're getting Tim and Krista. Which Krista? Who knows? I didn't get a last name on the calendar.
Again, I'm 99% sure Krista from Kit and Krista. But
like, it could, maybe Tim has a neighbor down the street named Krista who likes video games.
That's true.
There's no way to know. Wednesday, it's me and Tim. Thursday, it's me and Tim. Friday, it's Tim and me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for you.
Switch up right there.
Barry, take this tweet down. This is a tweet from yesterday that says Wii U is greater than PlayStation Vita. I don't like this.
I thought really hard about this, though.
Yeah? You know where'd you come down? Remember, the Vita has Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah, I know. I bought a Vita.
The Wii U had Captain Toad.
Are you trying to equate those two things?
Yeah.
We can fight right here, Barry.
The Wii U has...
Greg and Tim are here. They're not here to stop me from getting to you behind
Wii
that window.
Wii U has Wind Waker HD Remake. That's what I'm...
Oh, God, no. Barry's walking to the door. I was joking, Barry. I was joking. Oh, God. What have I done? It's like a wrestling... He's running in like a wrestling... Oh, he's going to give me... Oh, God. That felt so much like a wrestling entrance. Like, all that was missing was, like, music to come on. What'll be your wrestling entrance music? I'm going to go with Linkin Park. I know.
Damn. That was scary.
That was scary.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about a white man darting at me. You know what I'm saying?
I apologize for putting you both in that situation.
Give me flashback.
God.
If you're watching this live, after this is Dead Space with Andy and Nick. If you want to catch that stream later, you can, of course, subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Remember, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, live right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. Until next time, Game Daily. Shake my hand.